My name's Mike, coming at it. And I'm really nervous, tired, jet lag as well. I just got back on holiday 2 days ago. And I'm feeling quite sad, actually, because as soon as I got back from holiday, I've heard nothing but bad news, you know. And one of my friends just relapsed after about 12 years, and another friend of mine relapsed. And tonight, I just got told my last sponsor died of a heart attack. And, you know, just feel really sad, you know what I mean? And my mate, who just relapsed about 12 years, I kind of like could see something was going wrong. And I was always told in recovery, you know, 90% of people relapse over finance or romance, you know. And I watched my friend have a nice marriage, and he had a nice job. He went to lots of meetings. But he didn't have a sponsor. He was like self-will, and he kind of like white-knuckled it for years and years and years. And I saw the dishonesty come in. You know, that spiritual principles of honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. And I saw his dishonesty come in, and he shared with me that he's having an affair with somebody. And his wife found out, and we lost the house. And his missus hanged on to him, but he lost the girl that he was having an affair with. And he was on painkillers for a while. And I phoned him up to see if he was all right before I went away. He was, and lost his job as well. And I just got told as well, you know, that he went on the E's, he went on the Charlie, and he was on the heroin, and he had a heart attack, and they had to put an injection in his heart to revive him, you know. And he's like a newcomer again, and it just shows me the power of this illness, you know. Cunning, powerful, and baffling, and this illness doesn't care what colour you are, black, white, or pink, it would kill you, you know. That's what I've seen in recovery. And I'm just grateful, you know. I'm just so grateful that through the grace of God, the great cause of NA, 12 steps, you know, that I'm still, just for today, clean and sober. And I just come back from holiday. I was in the Caribbean, and it was really nice. And I'll just share quickly. And I was doing diving, and I haven't dived for about 4 years. And I went 20 feet down, and my instructor said to me, look, hold the rope, and I'll meet you all the way down there and wait for the rest of them. And I got like halfway down there, and this fear kicked in. I thought I was gonna see sharks, and I thought, mate, I'm getting out of here. And I ended up like running, crawling back up the ropes again. And the instructor went to me, no, come back down, come down. And I was so feared up, you know. And I ended up going, get down the bottom with him. And I feel really embarrassed saying this. He had to hold my hands. we're like going down in the middle of the Caribbean Sea, holding hands. And after about 5 minutes, I let go. You know that one. The man grew up. I saw the light, and I didn't see no sharks. But I got this mad vision in my head: sharks are coming. I'm in their territory. You know what I mean? And like, and I'm looking around, panicking. And you know, after that, I was alright after that, and it was cool. And my partner that I went out with, she got ill. She had like food poisoning, and she ended up in the hospital in Santo Domingo, and she was on drips. And I wait a year for this holiday, and I'm in the room like sleeping on this sofa bed, and it's baking hot, and like 2 days have gone by, and I'm looking at her, like, I got to be honest, I was getting a bit resentful. I was thinking like, shit, I paid for this holiday, and like, I ain't getting no sun, you get me? And see, I got to be honest, my sponsor said to me, mate, be brutal honest, you know? And you know, this is how I work my program. Every morning I pray, I do an inventory every day. And my inventory always tells me the truth. I like, in the mornings, I used to go downstairs to the hospital, and I sat aside on the bench, you know, and I'm writing my resentments, like I'm resentful towards her, you know what I mean? Because like, the holidays is ill, I'm not getting no sun, and I'm scared that she might be sick the whole 2 weeks. And I'm resentful, and like, my head's telling me, why don't we just go back to the hotel, you know, and chill out, and she might, when she gets better, she'll come back. And I'm writing it out, and I've got to look at my part in it. I was selfish, self-seeking, you know what I mean? And You know, my menace to my partner, you know what I mean? She's a lovely human being. She's another recovering addict. I've got to have love and compassion for her, you know what I mean? And I kind of like had to work on that aspect of my recovery. And that kind of like, I went back upstairs and I wrote out my infantry the next day. And I kind of like had this vision in my head that she's going to come out on a Saturday. And then when I went back upstairs to the room, she said, oh yeah, I'm better now, you know? But like, I was screaming in my head. I was going like, look, let me go back to the hotel, get changed. I come back and see her. But I saw myself in a deck chair, sunglasses on, like just doing the days out there, you know what I mean? Waiting for her to come back with like anger in her eyes, you know what I mean? And she said to me, like, Mike, thanks very much for being there for me, you know what I mean, every day. And I thought, little did you know, did I want to do a runner, you know what I mean? And like, you know, but thank God I did it. I stayed, you know? And, you know, these are the things that recovery's given me today, you know what I mean? I've got to like keep working on myself. And when I was out there as well, like I was watching a DVD tape, and I ain't watched this DVD tape for about 15, 16 years, and it was Scarface, you know? The last time I watched Scarface, man, I was high on cocaine, you know? And I thought I was him, you know? And I thought to myself, like, you know, I'm in recovery now, you know, I can handle it, you know what I mean? And I stuck the DVD on, and I'm like, I'm seeing all the coke and, you know, and I'm seeing all the cars and all the flash cut girls and, you know, all the trimmings and all that. And I remember the part when he says, look, don't get high on your own supply. And I thought to myself, I didn't hear that line. I heard, test out your own supply and get high. And, Jesus, man, it was crazy. Like, you know, it just brought back so much memories for me, you know? And, yeah, and I'm just so glad that, you know, because people like that was kind of like my heroes, you know? I wanted to always be a gangster, you know? And I'd share with you quickly, like, where I come from. I come from Dulwich. I come from a broken family. You know, my mum, we had, like, 5 kids in the family. From an early age, right, from school. I couldn't read or write when I was at school, and I used to sleep at old people's houses every night. I used to wet the bed. My mum used to strangle me. She was really angry. I know why today, because I was the oldest boy, and I got it. My dad ran off with someone else, and I ended up getting in trouble at age of 12. I ended up like, committing like 25 burglaries, and I'd done it just to be like part of the gangs and all that. And I was brought up by nuns, children's homes, in and out of institutions, by, you know, children's homes and all that. And I was given a probation officer. And I went to a children's home, and she was like my mother, my probation officer. And she said to me, Mike, do you want to go to a boarding school, special needs boarding school, where you can get 3 meals a day, wet the bed, you know, and all that sort of stuff. And I thought, yeah, that sounds really nice. And I went out to this boarding school in the West Country, and it was really beautiful. You know, it was like 8 of us in the class and all that. Teachers were loving and all that. And it was a good school. But then in that school, something happened to me. I was sexually abused by a psychiatrist. And I didn't tell the teachers what happened to me. And I kind of like shut down. And I didn't trust people no more. Do you know what I mean? And where I come from as well, Dulwich, you know, a lot of my friends went to Brixton, moved to Brixton on the front line, and that's where I grew up, on the streets in Brixton. And every time I used to have a half-time holiday, I'd go back to Brixton. And I remember, like, getting involved with the police. Like, I was a pickpocketer. At the age of, like, 15, I was a pickpocketer, like Oliver Swift and all that. And the only people I trusted was my gang, you know. And, you know, at the age of 16, I had a girlfriend, we had a little daughter. I ended up getting a ball stool when I was in the scrubs. And I remember getting a Dear John, a letter from my partner saying that you're not going to see your daughter no more, you know, because you've been messing about. And I remember being in this cell in the scrubs. I couldn't cry. I found out she was getting drunk, sleeping with all my mates. And, you know, my first drug was fantasy, you know. I started to think about acting out with all my friends and all that, and I got really angry. I started to act out of myself and like getting into really deep fantasy, you know what I mean? And that was the only way I could put myself to bed, was like act out, think about her, and like, you know, deal with it that way. And it progressed in my illness, you know. I came out of a ball stool. I said I had one girlfriend, I'll have 3 girlfriends. one leaves me, I've got two, you know. I took hostages. And I was always told that once you've been abused, you know, you become the abuser yourself, and I did, you know. You know, my crimes confessed from, like, burglary, for pickpocketing. Then, you know, I remember when I was in Ballstall, people used to say to me, Mike, have you ever been to the Old Bailey? If you go to the Old Bailey, you go down the bus, and they've got this round table, and the bus goes on it, and it turns. And I thought, God, I wonder what that would be like, you know. That sounds really exciting, you know. And at the age of like 16, 17, I end up going to the Old Bailey. And I end up getting on that bus and seeing it turn, and it meant nothing to me, you know. And, you know, I just progressed. I started to drink when I was about 15 or 16 as well. And when I was in prison, if I wanted to learn something, I learned it from the older criminals, you know. And they showed me how to, like, get involved with, like, you know, fraudulent banks and stuff like that. And, you know, when I come out of Ballstall, I ended up getting like 3 years and 2 years for like fraudulent banks all over the country and all that at the Old Bailey again. I ended up getting the 3 years and the 2 years. And I didn't get no parole when I was in prison. I'd done all the prisons. I used to work in the bathhouse looking after all the lifers and scrubs and all that. You know, I think for me, I was searching for love. I had this empty hole in me. You know, I was really insecure, you know. A pound note was my God. You know, if I had jewelry, I had a nice car. You know, that's the sort of stuff that really used to, like, impress me, you know. And I came out of prison when I was about, I don't know, 24. And I ended up, like, seeing that film Scarface, wanted to be like him, started to sell drugs, started to hang out in the clubs in the West End night, you know, Stringfellas and all that. I had a beautiful, you know, I had a lot of money. I made a lot of money selling drugs and, like, you know, being a gangster. But really, I was a little kid inside. I hadn't grown up, you know. And for me, you know, I took drugs because I wanted to act out, you know. I wanted to get a buzz, but it fed my addiction, you know. And you know, when I used to use, I used to draw the curtain. I'd snort like half ounce of coke. I'd have a half ounce of like Thai weed and drink and like act out with women, sex films, and like gain it in the fantasy. You know what I mean? That's how damaged I got. That's how, you know, people don't get honest about this illness, you know. It goes deeper than drugs and drink to me, you know. It gets you, you know, in if it doesn't get you in the drugs, and get you in the sex, it get you in the money, get you in all different ways, you know. And I've seen this in my recovery, and, you know, I was really sick. You know, I used to, like, be a criminal in the daytime. At nights, I'd want to smoke crack, you know, and act out, you know. And I had a lovely flat in Hampstead. I had a nice car, you know. I used to really look after myself until my friend said to me, Mike, why don't you stop sticking up your nose and put it on the pipe, you know. In them days, it was free basing. And I always remember my mate, what a good mate he was. And he said to me, like, you know, try it on the pipe. And I did. And I fell in love. You know, I was hooked. I stayed on that sofa for like 48 hours, sucking that pipe, you know. And I had 3 bank accounts in the West End, and I remember going in there every day, drawing out £1,000 a day, paranoia, you know, thinking that the police are coming through the windows and all that. And, you know, and I was very abusive, you know what I mean? I was acting out with my partners, abusing them, you know what I mean? And like this, I didn't know the word love. You know, I took hostages, abused women, you know, and I abused myself. And that's where my addiction took me. And, you know, I always remember the highs, Stringfellas, champagne, fun, you know. But I also remember the lows as well, you know, like selling my car for crack. You know, I had a beautiful black Mercedes convertible. And I sold that for drugs, and I smoked that out within like 2 weeks, like 30 grand, you know what I mean? And it was mad, and I saw my illness getting stronger in me, you know what I mean? I ended up like selling all my CDs and my albums, and you know, selling things in my house. You know, the car went, the jewelry went, the clothes went, and I ended up looking at my TV. I had a big screen TV, and I looked at it, and I smoked a crack pipe. And I went down to the minicab office, an African bloke's, and I said, how much? And they said, oh, 30 quid, and it cost me £1,000. And I kind of like gave it to them for like 30 quid. And I remember sticking like one rock in my mouth, and I wouldn't let the smoke out of my mouth. I was dribbling, and I was thought, I can't let this one out, you know. Then after I finished that, I wanted to kill myself. I thought, I've got no TV. Sold my settees, and, you know, my partner walked out at me, my two kids as well, after that. She went into a refuge, and all I remember that I sold everything in that my partner's flat, and the last thing I sold was my bed for one rock. And I had a little black cat, and if I would have put that cat on the pipe, I would have smoked it. You know, that sounds cruel, but that's how desperate I was, you know what I mean? And I remember, like, sleeping at night, I didn't want to see daylight. I used to shut the curtains, and I didn't want to see daylight. I was like a vampire. Again, the dustbins, looking for dog ends and picking up, you know. You know, I ended up in the park smoking Tenants and special booze from, like, Champagne King down in the dumps like a tramp. And I wanted to die. And a friend of mine said to me, Mike, like, let's go and work the underground. Went pickpocketing again. And I said to him, look, I've had enough. I'm going to go into treatment. And I remember going into, like, a treatment center, detox. And there was a guy in there. He was a counselor. But he was the worst junkie I've ever seen. He used to stick needles in his arm. And he was in my cell in the scrubs. And I said to him, Dave, I said, you look well. He said, yeah, Mike, you look like shit, you know. And he kind of said to me, Mike, you're sick, you know what I mean? You need to get into rehab. And I remember being in this detox. And I saw the power of my illness saying to me, like, Mike, let's walk out. Let's go and smoke some crack. And I used to see women walking out every day prostituting themselves for crack. And I started to hit my knees at night. And when I used to hit my knees in prison, I'd say, please, God, get me off this court case. And that's how I used my higher power. But I was in this treatment center praying to God, please, God, keep me. And I'd done the 3 weeks. Then they put me on a train, and I went to a treatment center. And I remember walking to the treatment center like Eddie Murphy in Trading Places. You know, big smile on my face, looking at all the pictures on the wall. I nicked that. Looked at the Catry. I nicked that. Looked at all the women. I love her, you know. And I was just scheming, you know what I mean? I was a hustler off the streets, and I didn't know nothing. And people were hugging each other. And I thought, these people are weird. I'm not hugging them, you know? I thought, you know what I mean? This is mad. And I remember being in this treatment center, and a friend of mine, he looked after me for like 3 weeks. And I remember people like Layla, you know, stopping me from walking out of this treatment center. Three or four of them saying, Mike, come on, let's talk about it. And I would say, it's him, you know, trying to blame other people for my illness. And my mate, you know, Phil, he looked after me, and he said to me, Mike, I'm going on for the weekend. And he gave me his watch, and I remember getting called in the office, and I found out that he died. He had a cocktail of heroin and cocaine, and he died. And that's when it really hit home that I'm up against life and death, you know. And people said in the treatment center, you know, if you don't like what NA's got, it will find you back in misery. And that really scared me. And it said the circle, if you go in the edge, you'll fall off. If you go in the middle, you'll get saved. And people said to me, get honest, get real. I've never been honest and real all my life. I was a liar, I was a cheat. I was a con artist, you know. And that's the way I live my life, you know what I mean? By telling lies and like manipulating people, because that's all I knew, you know. And I started to like, you know, I couldn't read the book, How It Works, because I couldn't read. And I'd pass it around and all that. And I managed to stay in this treatment center for like 3 months. And I thought, if I get a medallion, I've cracked it, you know. And I remember getting the medallion and thinking I was going to go home. And they called me in the office. And they said to me, Mike, I said, I'm going home. He said, you're not. You're going to an adult child treatment center in West Silverware. And, you know, and they said, you won't get your kids back because they won't come back to you because of your crack addiction. And I remember getting to Western Supermare and in this treatment center. And we went really deep in therapy. And I found out, that's when I found out I was sexually abused. They took me right back as a kid and all that. I learned how to cook, and I couldn't cook because the women always looked after me. I went to college, learned how to read and write. And I stayed in Western Supermare, and I was like a kid. I walked in the treatment like 30-something years of age, but I was like 16, 18-year-old kid inside, you know. I had to grow up. And the beauty thing is I spent a year in treatment, and when I came out of treatment, when I used to look at all the trees, they looked beautiful. And I looked at food, and I could smell food, you know. And I kind of like grew up in Western, you know. And it was, and also having friends as well. The friends in recovery are second to none, you know. When I was on the streets, I was a gangster. I had lots of friends, but when I found myself in treatment, I had no friends. And the people in recovery gave me unconditional love. They really did. And that I couldn't fall, you know, and that's what I really needed, unconditional love. Because where I come from, I was used to people being horrible to me, so I can put up the front, you know. But in recovery, people gave me unconditional love, which they still do to this day, and that to me is priceless, you know. And I kind of like worked the steps in treatment, 1 to 5, you know, got a job, girlfriend, and all that sort of stuff. I was dishonest in my relationship. I told my partner, and then we went back, came back to London after I got 5 years. And I remember coming back to London, and I got right involved. I ended up splitting up my relationship, you know. And that's when I see this program, really powerful program. When my partner left me before I got in recovery, I was a broken man. I was in so much pain, and I split up my other relationship, and I was in so much pain. But what I'd done, I didn't pick up the drink or the drug. I went to meetings and I shared from my belly. You know, I didn't care if I cried. You know, fuck, big man like me, I'd cry in recovery to this day. You know. And that's how I get well, you know what I mean? And like, I kind of like told people that I'm hurting, and they gave me love and they looked after me, you know? And that's when I see this program working, you know? And I got through that relationship, and I got involved with service in the London conventions, doing the programming. I went to the World Convention. I got involved with H&I in Hyderabad Prison. I'd done that every week, you know? I got a job. I ended up working for the newspapers, a criminal like me, you know what I mean? And it was just mad, you know. I see my life coming back together. I ended up getting my kids back, not my partner. She went with someone else. And the sponsor that just died, he took me through the steps 1 to 6. And I actually saw him relapse, not relapse, but I saw what was going on for him. I saw dishonesty take him as well. And I don't want to like gossip because he's died now, you know. I saw him like money getting taken from the service and all that. And I brought some money to him, and I saw how he was looking at the money that I had in my pocket, and I kind of felt, you know, diseased against him and all that. And I heard that he relapsed and he's gone into recovery, and now he's just died. And I just saw that dishonesty again kicking on him as well, you know. And it's so, you know, people said to me, you know, dishonesty, it takes you out. And I believe it does. It poisons your recovery, you know. And, you know, I stayed in the program, got 5 years. Got another girlfriend, got a job, paid my bills, and done service, and things were going good. And I got to 10 years, and I thought I had 3 stripes. And I share this because it frightens me to this day, you know. I was earning lots of money, and I had a flat, girlfriend, you know, not girlfriend, but like, I was making money, and I was like, my illness said to me, Mike, why don't we go around my ex-girlfriend's house that I used to smoke crack with? And I ended up over there, Leicester Square, in her flat. And I bought a couple of bottles of wine, and all I could see was legs. You know, I was in there, I wanted to act out of her, sexually, you know. That's how my illness works. If it doesn't want to get me in a drink, or if it doesn't want to get me in the drugs, it get me in the others. And it got me in there, and I was in there, and I wanted to act out. And to this day, I swear, I thank H&I, because every week I was going in that H&I prison, and I thought of those guys in there. And I realized if I picked up that crack pipe with that girl, she picked up the crack pipe in front of me. And I looked at it and I thought, yeah, this is what, it was like my higher power saying to me, Mike, turn left or turn right, it's up to you. And I thought with these guys in the prison, like, I go every week and I built up this relationship with all of them. And I thought, if I pick up that crack pipe, I'm gonna be a newcomer, or I might never make it back. And I thought, Mike, and I don't know how I crept out of that room, man, you know? And I ended up like snapping my leg playing football, snapped my Achilles tendon, and I ended up in hospital with a book. And I remember reading it, that's how powerful it was. I ended up reading it, tears falling down my eyes. And I met this old timer in the West, in Essex, and he took me through the steps again. You know, because I thought, like, I've got 10 years, that word complacency frightens the life out of me. You know, complacency means to me, come here, come sit your ass on one of these chairs, you know. Because it doesn't matter how many years you are, this illness waits for you. It wants you to get the nice girlfriend. It wants you to get the car. It wants you to get the good job. It wants you to get money. It still waits on you. And it's cunning, you know, this illness. And, you know, and how you work the spiritual program to me is by working the steps, having a God, doing service. You know, my first step, you know, if I'm not intimate with you or intimate with my God, I'm in my illness. When I'm intimate, sorry, I don't know why I got internet phone. Yeah, I ain't been touching it.
Own it? No.
It's all coming out now, isn't it? When I'm intimate with you guys and intimate with God, you know, I'm in my recovery. And and that's how it works, you know. And my sponsor took me through the steps again, and it was good, you know. I got to like step four, you know, and he said, write down all my character defects, which, you know, I can share with you guys. One of them is jealousy. I'm a very jealous guy. I don't know where I got it from. I must be insecure or frightened from all my partners in the past. When my partner speaks to other men, my head says she fancies them, or they fancy her. And I get possessive, and I get angry, and I want to fight people. Jesus. And that came down on my paper. I'm very jealous, possessive. I was very self-seeking. I was angry, you know, pride, eager, denial, you know. And I wrote it all down on my step four. And my sponsor said to me, Mike, you're having a good time? I said, yeah. He said, turn it over. He says, look at your part in things. And it was the first time a man's ever told me, look at your part in things. And I was self-seeking, frightened, and dishonest. I was, you know, for me, when I get angry and resentful, I want to punish people. I'll sabotage relationships as well. I've done them in recovery, you know. That's one thing about the steps, they frighten me. And if I'm in my character defects, it blocks me away from God, you know. When I work on myself, I see who I am. Today I know who I am, you know. I am very self-seeking, frightened, dishonest sometimes, and I have to keep working this spiritual program, you know. And when I've done my step four, you know, I saw who I was for the first time, you know. And he said to me, Mike, you need to work on yourself, you need to change. And I've done my step five with him, and six, you know, having that willingness to want to change, you know. And, you know, seeing how I am in relationships, wanting to change, you know. For me, you know, that willingness, you know, I can cause people harm if I don't become humble and become willing to change my character defects. I've seen the pain that I've caused women in recovery, you know, from the way I've been, and I've had to be humble, and I've had to like ask my higher power. He said, hit your knees and do step seven prayer, you know, and I've had to do that, and it's worked for me, you know, and I've had to write my amends to all the people that I've harmed, like bank managers and partners. And people said to me, you know, when you do your ninth step, you see God show up in your life. I had two relationships in recovery that I ended. And I said to my sponsor, what do I do with these partners that I ended the relationships? He said, Mike, have you seen them? And I said, no. He said, good, stay away from them. And I thought, yeah, I got away. and I remember like driving my car in Streatham, and I saw my ex-girlfriend that I went out with for 2 years. And I thought, Mike, you've got to go out and make amends to her. And I did. I stopped the car and I went over to her. And I said, look, I'm really sorry for what I've done to you and all that. And she said, Mike, it's all right. I work it. I'm a counsellor and all that. And it's really powerful, you know what I mean? And I felt better talking to her, you know what I mean? And then there's my other girlfriend that I kicked her out of my ass because I had an affair. And she was crying every night. And I was with her 4 years. And I thought, I'm not going to see her. She's in the West Country. And I'm in Essex in Tesco's, and I've got a trolley. And I've gone into Tesco's, and I've got this trolley, and I bumped right into her. And the trolley doesn't want to move. You know, the wheels are stuck, you know. Jesus. And I thought, my higher power's got a sense of humour, you know. And I had to make amends to her, you know. And she was one woman that I really wanted to make amends to, you know. And I said, I'm sorry for what I've done to you. And she said to me, Mike, look, I've moved on, I got married and all that, you know. And it was really powerful. He showed me the ninth step works. And I went to my dad. I made amends to him because I hated him because he was never there for me when I was a kid. Didn't show me love, didn't buy me nothing. Everything I had as a kid, I stole it. I stole bikes, stole clothes off the line. And I had to make amends to my dad. And he said to me, son, I'm really proud of you being in recovery. You just keep going, you know. And I made amends to my kids, you know. And, you know, I've got a daughter who's hooked on crack. And she was in the hospital the other day. She had a dirty hit. And it was really sad that I saw my daughter through my first relationship. And her mum died of this illness 2 years ago. And my daughter saw her mum get blown up by the oven, 99% burns. And my daughter, she's got my illness. And I saw her in the hospital, and she was in a bad way. And I kind of like tried to make amends to her, like looked after her. And what I'd done, I took her to meetings, a couple of meetings every day, introduced her to people and all that. Then I found out that she was had another breakdown. She was in Maudsley Hospital. And that was really hard for me to go into the lock ward and see my little daughter in there, you know what I mean? And it, You know, she said to me, Dad, if Mum hadn't died, you know, I wouldn't be here today, you know. And I gave her a cassette, you know, and I gave her some CDs of People in Recovery. And I said, look, listen to them. I'm here for you, you know what I mean? And I phoned her up. Then she called me the other day as well. I said, look, Dad, I've got something to tell you. I said, what is it? She said, I've got a love affair with crack. It's my lover, you know. And tears started to fall down my eyes that night, you know, and I realised that I can only carry the message. I can't carry the addict, you know. And I had to give it back to a higher power, and it was really hard for me to do that, you know. And I said to her, look, I'm there for you. And then she kind of phoned me up the next day and said to me, look, I hate you. You've never been there for me. And she put the phone down. And that was really hurtful as well, you know. And I've had to deal with that sort of stuff, you know, in recovery. And, you know, and doing those amends in that ninth step, I remember when I got to my tenth step, I broke down crying. And I said, I want to change. My sponsor said to me, you will change. You do an inventory every single day. You work on your character defects, your resentments, your anger, and look at your part and stuff, and do your amends to people, and write a fear list, a gratitude list every day. And I've done that stuff every single day for the last 4 or 5 years. I do a thorough inventory every day, 10, 11, and 12. You know, do it every day. Hit my knees, read a book, and I do my inventory. And I swear this stuff showed me, you know, I know why I work the steps, because it stops me from destroying myself. You know, I project a lot. And when I project about tomorrow or next week, why it's so painful, why it's so painful, because I go in alone in my head, you know. And to me, this program is about surrendering. It's about letting go. You know, I've noticed that in recovery. Because for me, I kind of like, you know, if I'm at work, I kind of want to think what the bosses are thinking. I think that my friends are going to hurt me and all this sort of stuff. And it's about keeping it a day, keeping it simple, and like surrendering, you know. And my job in recovery is that every day I've got to surrender to this illness and to my mad head, you know. And if I don't surrender, I can't go forward, you know. And that's what I have to do every day, surrender, let go, let God, and accept people, places, exactly how they are. The only person that I can change is myself, you know. And it is an inside job. It's about action. It's about taking responsibility. You know, I'm not a child no more. I'm a grown-up person. And in the next couple of weeks, I'm coming up to 15 years. And thanks. And that, to me, is a miracle. You know what I mean? I couldn't hold down a job before I got in this program. I've learned how to read and write. I'm dyslexic, you know. I work the steps, you know. And I share this. And I've never shared this before, you know. I ended up working in the Old Bailey, you know, on a murder case with the police, you know, and looking after the judge and taking the kids out of courts. And that, you know, 15 years ago, no one would ever let that happen to me, you know. Then I ended up looking after Man United for the weekend, and I've ended up doing some of the fantastic jobs in recovery, you know what I mean? And that, to me, is a miracle, you know. Today, I pay my bills, I show up, I do service. I'm back in Brixton Prison doing service in the prisons every week. You know, the newcomers, they keep me here. I love giving back today. It's about unity, you know. When I'm on my own, I am dangerous. An addict on his own is dangerous company. I come to these meetings to grass up my addict. This is where I get my medicine from, you know. I've seen this illness at full works, you know. I've gone to therapy, you know, 12 steps. This is a 12-step program. I swear on it, you know. Without God, without you lot, I am nothing. This program works, but I don't work good. You know, without this program, I'm nothing, you know. And I can go any day, you know, if I get complacent. And I want to stick around, you know. And I sponsor people today. And when I first come around, no one would want me to be their sponsor. But I was told, you know, you come to this program, you've got to learn how to walk the walk, not talk the talk, you know. It is about action. It's about giving back. And I love my higher power today. He's looked after me. You know, I've seen people, really intellectual people, clever, to think that they know this program well, and I've seen them go back out there, you know. And it's a simple program, you know. And I believe in prayer. I believe everyone's got their own higher power. You know, I talk to my higher power. He's my best friend today. You know, every morning I hit my knees. I'm not saying that because, you know, I'm trying to be big-headed about it. I just feel like someone saved my life. Someone took me out of the pit, right? And I was in the corner, and I wanted to die when I came in this program. I used to sit on the floor and cry, and I wanted people to fix me. And today, I'm a proud man, you know. I can get up and I can face the world you know, and I can do my writing work, you know what I mean? And I'm armored today with the 12 steps, you know, and I have love and compassion for people today. I don't abuse people, you know. I still have a little bit of fantasy in my head that I want to be a footballer or a millionaire or whatever, but that's this fantasy stuff, you know what I mean? And, you know, I got so much compassion today, and I do a gratitude list every day, and my gratitude, I write down, I'm grateful for being alive and well, because I've seen all my friends. I've carried coffins in this program. I've carried women's coffins as well, and I've loaded them in the ground, right? And I've seen their kids and crying in the churches and all that. These are the things that I've seen. I've seen a lot of my friends die. All my friends that I grew up in Brixton on the front line, I've carried their coffins because I've seen them say, yeah, I do it my way. This is the only way it works for me. You know, it's NA way. You know, I've got to take the cotton wool out of my ears and stick them in my mouth. And I have to have a sponsor, you know, because it's about, you know, if I take my will back, I'm dangerous. You know, every day I have to grass up my attic. You know, I have friends in recovery today that every day I check in with them. I tell them what goes on in my head and we share. You know, that's where I get love from. And I also write down my gratitude to be alive and well, to have friends and meetings, to have a job, to have a home, to have a bike, to have a car, to have a bosses that trust me. You know, I do a job today, I run a company in the Mayfair. 15 years ago, no one would trust me. I'd nick everything you've got. And today, people trust me, man. You know what I mean? And, you know, and this to be in this program, I'm so proud. I'm so, you know, grateful. It's a God-given program, and it works if you work it. And I love addicts today. They're my type of people, you know what I mean? And, you know, I hope someone got something out of this. And I'll leave it there. Thank you for everyone for listening.